Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on this episode of Fan of History. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Bernie.
How are you today?
I am good. How are you?
I am good. Before we start, I have to say I have a little melancholy just for things in life, and like the ancients are sometimes they could bring me down a little too with all their executions and just insane things that they do. They're very interesting and we love them. And it's so far away, like Dan Carlin says, it's like so far away you don't have to feel bad for people, but sometimes like lately, for whatever reason, these recent episodes we're doing just sort of it's like, God, could you just let somebody live?
A good thing we aren't doing Ashurnasipal the second episodes right now.
Yes, it is a good thing. Those are just like straight up brutality, but some of these ones are just, and the Greeks, boy, man, they are dark sometimes. They're really dark with these stories, you know?
For sure. I have an important announcement, but I will save that for next episode. But stay tuned for next episode.
Make sure you stay tuned for the next episode for important announcements.
If you listen to this episode, notice something strange with the Fan of History feed. Listen to the next episode.
Okay. And make sure you listen to the ads.
Yeah. And tell your friends about this show if you like it.
Please. I was thinking, I've been playing on the MetaQuest. Like, and I got one of those VRs, and I was thinking about changing my name to Fan of History. That would be my screen name. And then people say, what's that? I'll say, check out our podcast.
I use Fan of History as my screen name in every game I play.
Oh, then I'll have to be Fan of History too.
Yeah, then they'll get really confused.
I'll be Fan of History Bernie or Fan of History US.
You can just be Fan of History.
Oh, I guess that's true. Well, anyway, we're both the fans of history, and that'll be in our video games. If you find us online, it could be Dan or Bernie.
Yes.
Or some other fan of history.
Okay, let's go to Ionia.
Yeah, let's talk about the Ionians and Cyrus, because the last episode that we talked about this anyway, we know that Cyrus had conquered the Lydians, right, and taken over Sardis and all that stuff.
And taken over Croesus as his advisor.
He took Croesus as his advisor, but he's still there at this point in the story. And I'm using Herodotus for all of this, so we're just going to have to, you know, I'm sure he sprinkles in a lot of fascinating stuff just to make it more interesting. You know, I was listening to, did Dan Carlin just do it? Or no, it's because you told me about the Persian thing, his King of Kings. So I listened to that first episode again. And he mentions how Herodotus is like a new reporter. Like he talks about how when he was a reporter, you know, you talk about the news. You don't talk about like 20 planes landed today. Nobody wants to hear that. You only want to hear the good stuff. Like if it leads, it bleeds. But so a lot of the stuff is true, but sometimes you just highlight on the more interesting parts of the story to make people want to hear it. So that's kind of what for Herodotus does too. We wouldn't want to just hear boring stuff all the time.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And everybody should listen to King of Kings on Hardcore History as long as it is available for free.
Yeah.
Or buy it off Dan Carlin's site. But it's the sort of oldest episode while we record that he still has in the free feed.
Yeah. I'll tell you, listening to it, too, like I must have listened to it a long time ago, but now listening to it again, having, you know, doing so much more research in this, so his stuff is really good and he gets it all in there. But not all in there like we do. We really have a granular. There's a lot of little details we throw in there, so.
Exactly.
Exactly. So anyway, so but a little housekeeping before I get into the whole thing. I forgot to say after last time in Greece, after the battle of the champions, if that was where the 300 from the Argives champions and 300 champions from Sparta fought it out until there was only three guys left, two from Sparta, one from the Argives, three guys with serious PTSD. They did all that. They couldn't agree. So then the two armies came and they fought again and the Spartans won. So, but after that, we know the Spartans are famous for wearing their long hair and wearing scarlet capes. That after the Battle of Champions, that's when they brought on that tradition to start growing their hair long and wearing the capes. And the opposite, the people from Argos used to wear their hair long. And after this, they started cutting it short.
So if you see a short-haired Spartan, you know it's before the 540s.
That's right. Just makes me think about like these people with who get into the, you know, Graham Hancock stuff, and they when they don't know history, anything seems really a long time ago. But like in this podcast, we've gone back far. We like this to me. Some of these guys are new guys, like Spartans with long hair. Those are the new guys. The old Spartans, they used to have short hair. So there was no, you know, gods and aliens coming down to them then. Anyway. So, and another thing that happened around this time, just to clean house, is our old friend Thales, the first pre-Socratic philosopher, he dies, 546.
Oh, we'll miss him.
Yes, he was a good guy, Thales, supposed to be very handsome as well. So I'm going to introduce this other guy. His is sort of from around the area, and he's going to be more important later. He could be a little bit important now, but we're not really sure when everything happened with him, when he became a tyrant of, he becomes a tyrant of Samos. He may be a tyrant by now, but we'll talk about him more in the next episode, but next decade. But I think I just wanted to introduce him. His name is Polycrates, could be Polycrates, depending on how you want to pronounce it. Herodotus spends a lot of time on him, but he mostly does it, I think, just to do his, you know, stories, and he uses him as a literary figure. But so here's the part where I want to introduce him. Says that for whatever reason, him and the pharaoh Amasis of Egypt are buddies. And that's a story Herodotus has in there where Amasis and his sort of a mercenary, or he's got this whole thing. We'll talk about him another time too. So anyway, these two guys are friends. And the pharaoh thought that Polycrates was just too successful. He had too much good luck. Everything was luck, like everything went well for him. No matter what he did, it all worked out good. And he was worried about him. So he sends him a letter and he says, listen, everything goes so good about you. I'm afraid something's going to bad happen to you. You can't just have all this good luck all the time. So you have to do something to just reverse your fortune, the fates, etc. So he takes the advice. He tells him to get rid of like something so important to him, something that he loves. So he has this jewel and signet ring that he loves. That's his favorite thing. So he takes it out and he throws it in the sea. Just to get rid of it. So see there, I'm not so lucky, I lost it. And then a couple of days later, a fisherman is fishing and he catches this beautiful fish and he cuts open the fish to eat it or whatever. And he opens and he finds this amazing ring inside the fish. So what does he do with the ring? He says, oh, I must give it to the king. So he takes cuts the fish open. You know, he takes the ring to the king and now Polycrates has his ring back. And when the Amasis finds out about this, he writes him a letter and says, we can't be friends anymore.
What a weird friend Amasis is.
I know, because he says something bad's going to eventually happen to you, and I don't want to, you know, be your friend anymore. I'm going to be sad later.
Quite foreboding.
I know. It is quite foreboding. I heard something recently that one of the myths is that when you were born, the Greeks, Zeus would have two like vases of stuff, right? Of luck. So when you're born, he just threw them in, right? Some good luck and some bad luck, and it gets all mixed up. But so if you have all good luck in the beginning, the bad luck's about to come at the end.
Oh, so zero sum game with karma.
Yes. That's in this. That's a little housekeeping, a little keeping us in the Ionian area. So we know Ionia is on the coast of what's today modern day Turkey. So it's on the west coast, kind of like right across there is Athens. So the Athens are kind of Ionians. Well, they are Ionians, then, you know, way back hundreds of years ago, they had, a lot of those had settled along the coast there. As you recall, they were all vassals of Croesus by this time. And then Croesus, of course, was beaten by Cyrus. And so I mentioned this last time, too. Cyrus came before he defeated Croesus, and he said, hey, you Ionians, why don't you revolt? And, you know, you guys revolt, and everything will be good for you. It'll be the same. It'll help me. But they said no. So then he beat Croesus, and now they are screwed. So they came to Cyrus, and they said, hey, we'll take that deal. And then Cyrus told them the story about the fisherman he was a piper. And he walked on the beach, and he played his pipe to the fish for them to dance, and they wouldn't dance. But when he caught them in a net, now they would dance. So it's the same kind of a thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So let's go through this, what Herodotus says about what happens in this area a little bit. I'm going to go through it like one by one. This is in Herodotus. So then the first thing Herodotus does, he goes through all the cities in Ionia, which we can't really do here because it'll be boring and you don't really know where I'm talking about. If it was a YouTube video, I could point them out, but he really goes into it. So if you're interested in this, I recommend go check it out. I'll put the links to the part in Herodotus that's to read. And he goes through all the different places, goes through the history of all the, you know, the towns and stuff like that. So he makes you feel like, oh, that's what's going to happen to all these people. Are we ready?
Yes.
All right. So the first group is the Milesians. And they had already made a treaty with the Persians. So they really didn't have any problem. And also a lot of the parts of Milesia, of this area, were islands. And the Persians were not sailors, and they had not yet conquered the Phoenicians. So they were okay. So there's 12 Ionian cities, he tells us, and then there's another group called the Aeolians. So there's 11 of those. And Herodotus tells us that the Aeolians had settled where the land was better than on the Ionian territory, but the climate was not so good. And there are some of these areas, these Ionian cities are islands. So there's Lesbos and Tenedos. They, like the other islanders, they didn't have anything to fear because the Persians were not seafaring at this time.
Not yet.
Not yet, until they conquered the Phoenicians. So the Ionians and the Aeolians got together and said, hey, what are we going to do about this? Because, you know, they're independent cities, but they still had conferences, meetings. They had this whole, like, pan-Ionian thing. They've had games. They had conferences. They sort of had a loose confederacy, which is to say, and funny to say, he tells us that somebody advised them they should all get together and just leave, like every single one, just get up and go somewhere else and start a new place somewhere else. But they didn't do that.
That's probably quite good advice.
It was good advice. And you know what? When I find it here, I tell you where he told them to go. I forget where he told them to go. But what they did was they got together and they said, what are we going to do about all this? And so they sent envoys to Sparta for help. They figured, well, maybe the Spartans will help us. So they found this Phocaean guy. His name is Pythermus, and he spoke for them. He put on a purple coat so that the Spartans would listen to him, and he made a long speech in asking for aid for the people, but the Spartans wouldn't listen to him, and they refused to aid the Ionians. So the Ionians left, but the Spartans, even though they rejected them, they sent a Pentecostor off to meet with Cyrus, just to see what's going on. So they went to Sardis to talk to Cyrus to say that he must harm no city on Greek territory, or else the Lacedaemonians would punish him. This is kind of a famous thing. So they went to Cyrus and they told them, that, you know, that they would punish him if they did anything to the Greeks. And this, so you know what Cyrus said?
At first, he probably said, who are these guys?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, who's the Spartans? So he told them they're Greeks and everything. He said to him, I never yet feared men who have a place set apart in the midst of their city where they perjure themselves and deceive each other. These, if I keep my health, shall have their own mishaps to talk of, not those of the Ionians. So that's kind of like a foreshadowing of the Persians laying down. They're laying down like the law that, you know, against all of the Greeks. That's how Herodotus says it. Because as we know, the Ionians revolt later, and then some Greeks help them, and then they go to war against all the Greeks. So you understand that obviously he meant that that was the marketplaces too, where they have the agoras. And so that's what he was referring to when he said that they lie and they do all this, you know, haggling and stuff in the marketplaces. So at this time, he leaves. So Cyrus is going to leave Ionia, and he's going to leave Sardis, I should say. And he leaves this guy Tabalus in charge of Sardis. And he gets this other guy, his name is Pactes, and he's a Lydian, to take charge of all the gold of Croesus and the Lydians. And so then Cyrus marches away to Ecbatania, and he took Croesus with him. And he was, they say that he, at this point, he was thinking of the Bactrians and maybe Babylon and maybe Egypt, and he wanted to lead another army against, you know, those. So he's gone from this area. But no sooner had Cyrus marched away that this Pactus guy, he made the Lydians revolt from Tabalus, and he went down to the sea where he had all this gold from Sardis, and he hired mercenaries and soldiers, and he persuaded some other men to join his army. And then he marched on Sardis, and he trapped the Tabalus in the citadel and besieged him. And can you see where we are, Dan? We could do a little narration here.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dan, you're Cyrus, and I'm Bernie. I'm sorry, I am Bernie, but I'm Croesus.
Okay, so Cyrus has a lot to do in the rest of his empire, but now the Lydians, at the first chance, started to revolt.
Right.
So Cyrus says to Croesus, what end am I to make, Croesus, of this business? It seems that the Lydians will never cease making trouble for me and for themselves. It is in my mind that it may be best to make slaves of them. For now, methinks I have done like one that should slay the father and spare the children. So likewise, I have taken with me you, who are more than a father to the Lydians, and handed the city over to the Lydians themselves. And then, forsooth, I marvel that they revolt against me.
So Cyrus uttered this thought, but Croesus feared that he would destroy Sardis, and thus answered him, O king, what you say is but reasonable, yet do not ever yield to anger, nor destroy an ancient city that is guiltless both of the former and the latter offense, for the beginning was my work, and on my head is the penalty, but it is Pactes, in whose charge you left Sardis, who does this present wrong. Let him therefore be punished, but let the Lydians be pardoned, and lay on this command, that they may not revolt or be dangerous to you. That's not the command. He says, and lay on this command so that they may not revolt or be dangerous to you. Send, I say, and forbid them to possess weapons of war and command them to wear tunics under their cloaks and buskins on their feet and to teach their sons lyre playing and song and dance and huckstering. Then, O king, you will soon see them turn to women instead of men, and thus you need not fear lest they revolt.
And to that Cyrus answers, just bring me Pactus back alive.
That's basically that last line I had you do there obviously sums it up, but that's basically what he said. Okay, fine. I like it. Herodotus always calling people like women. He's like, they're like women. He has this one where he says this king, this pharaoh of Egypt, marched all through the Levant and you know, conquered all these places. This is like way in the way back. And he put up these plaques. He put up like steles, and the countries that just surrendered right away, he put like pictures of vaginas because they were like women. They're very misogynist, these ancient Greeks.
Oh, yes.
So anyway, yeah. So he says if we teach them to be more like business people and not warriors and that kind of thing. And so then there's this whole thing. I'm skipping it all. He goes on this whole thing. He's got these funny little things where Pact is, they hide in a temple. It just shows you how the ancients were very big on, like, if you were a, I can't think of the word they call it right now, but when you're hiding in a temple or someone's taking care of you, that you can't let them go. Supplicant, I think they call it, that, you know, you're just not supposed to give them up. So Pactus, they finally find where he is. He's hiding at a temple. So then they go to all these oracles. Should we give him up? And they say, you know, yes, give him up. And the people are like, the guy says, goes to the oracle and he takes all the sparrow's nests down from the oracle and he just show him like, well, you know, how would you feel? Like, those are your supplicants. Now you're taking ours. Anyway, the oracle was probably right to get rid of this guy, and they get rid of him. They, they give him up. And the funny thing is, Herodotus goes, this whole thing, just bring me back alive, ha, ha, ha. And then he says, yeah, they caught him, and they gave him to him. And they don't tell you what he did to him. I guess you just have to assume he didn't survive much longer. He ended up, he went to Nineveh, and he's never heard from again.
Yeah, even if we say all the time that the Persians are less cruel than the Assyrians, they are not zero cruel.
Right.
And if you betray the Persian king, you will get Assyrian treatment.
Yeah, because there's one guy we'll find out. He's like, he sits on his father's chair. He sits on his father's chair that was flayed. His father was flayed, and he was like a magistrate, and they made a chair out of him. And then he has to work out of it. He's the next magistrate in the same town, and he has to like use the chair to remind him, don't be like your father.
Probably a very good reminder.
Yeah, made out of your father's skin. Yikes. I wrote this. I don't think Herodotus wrote it. To make a long story shorter, Cyrus has a Mede general named Mazares put in charge of catching Pactus and pacifying Lydia and Ionia. He catches Pactus, and he never tells us any more what happens to him. I guess he got a rough treatment. So then this Mazares guy quells the revolt in Lydia, but then he dies and he doesn't do anything else. So guess who comes back in charge of pacifying or conquering Ionia is Harpagus.
Oh, our old friend.
Yeah. So Harpagus is probably, we're pretty sure that he is a historical figure, even though, that feast and everything, that crazy feast that he ate his own son because of Astyages. Because even in the Chronicle of Nabonidus, they says that there's a Harpagus. So he says that when Harpagus came to Ionia, he took the cities by building mounds. He would drive the men within their walls and then build mounds against the walls and so to take the cities. So we know that the Assyrians built mounds to take cities, so it's not an unusual thing to realize that they did it that way.
That's like the brute force approach to siege work.
Yes. I was watching some YouTube videos on sieges, and it was like, one of the ways is to, do the miners. How would you like to be one of those miners? Like, they were like families. Like, they were like, it was like a trade to be like a miner, to get under a wall. But then one guy's got a miner, and the other guy's got a miner, team. And then you could run into each other in these mines, and man, it's a battle would ensue there underneath. God.
That sounds terrible.
Right? Whew. So here's what happens to each of these cities. Kind of talked about these the last time, but if you don't mind, I think I'll just do it again. Because it was about Phocaea. Because we talked about it when we did Carthage, how the Phocaeans ended up out there. But I'll just do it again. So we know that the Phocaeans were the first ones to do sea voyages according to Herodotus. They used to sail around these pentacosters, which are 50 oars. That's what pentacoster means. They have been going out to way out there, by Marseille and stuff. They call it Tartessus. So they say they made a friend with a king in Tartessus. And he said to him, why don't you leave Ionia and settle where I'm at out here? And he couldn't persuade him to do that. And when he learned how the Medes were getting so much more powerful, it says, Herodotus tells us that this king out here gave them money to build a wall around their city. And they say that's how the wall was made. But Harpagus marched against the city, and he besieged it. Anyway, of course, he told, so this is a good story here. So Harpagus, and the Persians are good. They're like, they do remind me, they have a good intelligence services. They don't want to come and like knock, fight every city and knock down every wall. They want to try to make deals as best they can. So Harpagus said, it would be okay for me if you would just demolish one bastion of the wall and dedicate one house. But the Phocaeans, they didn't want to be conquered. So they asked if they could take counsel for one day. And they said, while we're meeting, you must withdraw your army from the walls just for the one day. So Harpagus, he kind of knew what they were up to, but he let them do their thing. So when he withdrew his army from the walls, the Phocaeans launched all their Pentecosters, placed in them all their women and children and all their goods, everything except the statues and all the things like that, bronze and things like that. And they set sail for Chios. That's an island still in Greece. And then the Persians took the city uninhabited. So that's not the end of the story yet.
A pretty good deal for Harpagus anyway.
Yeah. First one out, right? So that's why he's smart. He's like, I'll let them do their thing. I'm sure they're just going to all leave. So then the Phocaeans, one of the Chian Islands called, I'm not going to try to pronounce it too. Oh, I guess I will.
Good luck.
Anise. But they wouldn't sell it to them because they felt like if the Phocaeans took over this island, they're too bitter of traders and sea people. So they weren't selling the island. So they decided they were going to sail off to Aelia. Remember, we talked about that battle of Aelia. So they were going to all sail off to Aelia. But of course, on their way out, they decided to sail back to Phocaea and kill all the Persian guard who Harpagus had left to save the city, defend the city, which I don't know, it probably wasn't the best idea.
Why did he do that if they didn't intend to stay?
Exactly.
Yes, because revenge.
Yeah, it is. They just, all these Greek stories are always just like, why'd you do that? So that's what they did. And that being done, they called mighty curses on whoever should stay behind when the rest sailed. In other words, if you're not going to stay, we just killed everybody. We have to leave. And they made all these, oaths and curses. Not only that, but they sank in the sea a mass of iron and they swore never to return to Phocaea before the iron should again appear. But while they appeared to go on their voyage, more than half of the city's citizens were taken, he says, with a longful and pitiful sorrow for the city and the life of their land. And they broke their oath and sailed back to Phocaea. Those of them who kept their oath set out to sea. Now, let's see what happened to them.
It must have been super dangerous to go back to Phocaea at this point.
I would think so, especially after you killed all those, people. So then, the next passage, Herodotus is going to tell us about the Battle of Aelia, which we talked about, so we won't get into that. But that's the battle that happened out in Sardinia with the Carthaginians and the Phocaeans. And the Tyrrhenians, too, I think. So I don't see how was the Tyrrhenian king given a wall for Phocaea to go around there? I think that was a little not true.
but the Phocaean plan here is to go to Sardinia.
Correct. And probably Marseille. Just leave, basically. Get out of there.
Get as far away from the Persians as possible.
You know what? So how about this, guys? So the Phocaeans that came back, I don't see what happened to them. I don't see that he tells us what happened to those ones that went back to the city. I'm sure it didn't go too well for them.
I guess they were enslaved by Harpagus.
I would think so. So the Teians is another place, another Ionian city, and they did this similar to what the Phocaeans do. When he took their city by building a wall, they all embarked on ships, and they sailed away to Thrace, where they founded the city of Abdera. And we talked about that, too. That city is in Thrace, and there's the guy from Athens went there, and he became their king, and all these things are happening there. And I believe he brings this up because it's important during the Persian Wars, when the big march armies marching over, they kind of come through this area. The next passage we got, he tells us those are the only Ionians who, on being unable to endure slavery, as he says, left their native lands. The rest of the Ionians, except the Milesians, as we said, who they made a deal, remained each as he was and did as they were commanded. The Milesians, like we said, they had a treaty with Cyrus, and he didn't attack them. So now he says, thus was Ionia for the second time enslaved.
So total victory for Harpagus.
For the Ionians. The next passage. Yeah, this is the part where I was telling you before with somebody, this guy's name was, the Ionians had the thing called the Pan-Ionian. It's funny, it's kind of spelled like panny onion. So the Pan-Ionian, there was this guy, his name is Bias of Prien. He gave them very useful advice, and which they obviously didn't follow. They should set out to sea and sail together to the island of Sardo and found one city for the Ionians. They would possess the greatest island in the world, and they'd be rid of slavery and win prosperity.
Well, why is that the greatest island in the world?
Well, it would be if they all moved there.
Oh.
So in other words, if all the Ionian 12 Ionian cities moved there, then they would, you know, have the greatest island of the world.
Well, that's good advice too.
It was. So now Herodotus tells us he has the Ionians. The next is he's going to be pursuing the Carians, the Conians, and the Lycians. And he took with them any of the Ionians and Aeolians that he was, you know, had put into his army. So now Harpagus has an army, you know, because he took these other cities. He has a bigger army, I should say. Because, you know, how are you going to take 12 cities if you just have like sort of an expeditionary force? We don't really think the Persians had a huge army, right? I think not. I mean, I think that they were very, at this point, they were probably growing a bigger army. But now he's using these other cities for soldiers.
Good work, Harpagus.
Good work, Harpagus. Now, I've used this passage before a long time ago because this is where we learn about the Carians. He gives us some stories about the Carians and how they came from. He says that the Carians maybe are, you know, originally from Crete and that kind of thing.
But they've been around for quite some time as sort of semi-Greeks in Turkey.
Exactly. And this is where we are.
And also worked for the Egyptians as mercenaries.
They did.
There were a lot of Carians in Egypt.
There were. And I think Gyges, if you remember, I always bring up Gyges. He used to use Carian mercenaries.
That's episode 89 of this podcast.
Oh, man, you are good.
Which I will talk more about in the next episode.
I'm sorry. I'm just like lost right now.
But we have a big victory for Harpagus here. He is conquering all of Turkey for Cyrus. He's even having islands surrendered to him, despite the fact that he can't reach them.
Right.
But now maybe he can with the help of Miletus.
That's right. So now he's going to do the Carians, the Conians, and the Lycians. And we got some good stories in here. So this is what Herodotus tells us. So he says that neither the Carians or any Greeks who live in this part of the country did any deed of note before they were all enslaved by Harpagus. And remember, Herodotus uses enslaved as, you know, meaning that you don't have, he doesn't like actually make slaves out of everybody, because the Persians weren't really big on slavery, although that's a whole thing we could talk about some other time. We have, and we surely will again.
That's a harsh review by Herodotus on the fighting ability of the Carians.
Yeah. So he says that there's this one group of people, they're called Cnidians, and they were originally colonists from Sparta. And they live near a peninsula. And so while Harpagus was busy conquering Ionia, and these guys dug a trench across this little space in order that their country could become an island, right? Because he's not able to conquer islands that easy. So they did all this work. And while they were doing it, they saw that a lot of their workers were being hurt less naturally than ordinarily would happen if they were, you know, doing this kind of work. And mostly in their eyes by breaking stones. So these guys, Cnidians, sent envoys to Delphi to inquire what was going on. Why was this happening? And they came back. It says, nor wall nor dig across your isthmus long ago. Your land had been an isle if Zeus had willed it so.
Oh God, now the priestess of Delphi is rhyming.
Right.
In English, at least.
Yes, in English, at least, right. I'm pretty sure she always rhymed, but in Greek. I think it's funny, too. They have time to go to Delphi while the Harpagus is attacking these cities. But I guess maybe it was toward the beginning and they were building this thing. So basically, they said if Zeus wanted your place to be an island, if gods wanted you to have an island, you would be living in an island. So cut it out. So with this answer, they ceased their digging. And when Harpagus came against them, they surrendered without any resistance.
Harpagus is doing great.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's conquering pretty good.
This is the first unification of Turkey in a very long time, since the Hittites, right?
Since the Hittites, but you know, I know something? I'm pretty sure that the Hittites didn't even have the coast.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's where we're...
Yeah.
That's where Troy was.
Right, right. Those were like the Luvians and stuff. There's this other place. Now, there's another place called Padassa. It's close to Halicarnassus, which is where Herodotus is from. And they said that when any misfortune was coming upon them or their nearby neighbors, their priestess of Athena grew a great beard.
What?
Anytime something bad was going to happen, the priestess of Athena grew a great beard. And this had happened to them 3 times, he says. That's what gets me about Herodotus. He like literally says that as if it's true. A lot of times he'll say like, but I don't believe it. But this, he's like, yeah, well, it happened to them 3 times that the priestess grew a beard. So apparently she grew a beard because there was going to be trouble. It says that these are the only men that really held out long against, from Caria, that held out long against him. So let's see what happens. He doesn't see what happens. He just took them. So they held out for a while, but their stronghold was taken. And because they were Spartans, I guess that's why he tells us that. So then he leads his army into the plain of Xanthus. And these Lycians came out to meet him. And they did all these valorous deeds to fight them. But they were worsted and driven into their city. And they gathered into the citadel with the other wives and their children and their goods and their servants. And they set the citadel on fire. And then they swore great oaths to each other. And sallying out, they fell fighting, all the men of Xanthus. So what happened then, too, was that apparently, if you meet anybody from Xanthus that says that they're originally from there, they're not, because everybody's dead, except for 80 families that happened to be away at the time. So that's what happened to Xanthus. And Xanthus starts with an X. He ends with saying that Harpagus then made havoc of Lower Asia. In the upper country, Cyrus himself subdued every nation, leaving none untouched. Of the greater part of these, I will say nothing, but will speak only of those which gave Cyrus the most trouble and are worthiest to be described. That's for later. He talks about that. So basically he says that, you know, Harpagus takes care of this area, and then Cyrus is off, you know, in the other area taking care of everything. And that, my friends, the best I could do is telling you how Harpagus and Cyrus and the Persians subdued the west coast of Turkey, known as Ionia, the Carians, the Aeolians, and all those other people.
So it's another total victory for Cyrus and the Persians.
Another total victory for Cyrus and the Persians. And over Greeks, which is kind of interesting, right? Just like took all these Greeks, and Greeks definitely give them trouble later in the future.
For sure.
Yeah, and that's the end of it. Phew.
Well, next time we will go to Babylon.
Oh, good.
And Nabonidus and Belshazzar.
Oh, yeah, Belshazzar.
We'll also make quick mention of India and Egypt.
Oh, good. Okay. Let's see what's going on there.
And that's for next time. If you like this show, please support us on Patreon. You also have the opportunity to do so on Fan of History Plus. And you can find links to that in the show notes. In Fan of History Plus, you can get rid of all the ads. If you don't want to be interrupted, you can support the show and get rid of the ads.
That would be great.
Follow the link in the show notes.
Yeah, the link will be in the show notes. And also rate our podcast if you can. We got some good ratings lately, and I appreciate that. We'll talk about them at another episode.
And share it with all your friends.
Please.
They need to know about Cyrus.
And if you run into a fan of history of playing a video game, it's a good chance you met Bernie or Dan.
If it's Magic the Gathering, it's probably me.
Oh, definitely you, if it's Magic the Gathering.
Or City of Heroes.
I'll have to look that one up.
It's an ancient MMO where you play a superhero.
That sounds pretty cool. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much. And thank you, Dan. I'll catch you next time.
Yeah. Talk to you next time.
All right, cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.